Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by BKCW. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined this morning by Jerry Hamilton and CJ Vogel. Bobby not with us this morning. CJ stepping in. And, guys, obviously the players met with the media.
Well, hey, Blake, real quick. Yeah. Hold on. It looks like you got some sun the last couple days. So I know a lot of the people tuning in want to see how our show prep is. So I said, well, let's bring up a photo so they can see what our show prep's really like. That's our show prep, guys. Sorry to CJ Vogel for being Newman in this photo. This is the On Texas Football show prep in the last 24 hours. So just in case anybody was wondering.
Yeah. Had I known Blake was looking this good, I wouldn't have worn all white. I would have gone for something that brought out my tan a little bit.
Oh, man. Yeah, a little sunburnt. 2 days at district track meet over the past 2 days. Baseball, T-ball, 7-on-7. And it continues later today as well. But that's all right. Anyway, tell us where you're checking in from, by the way, and what you're drinking. But let's get back to football now. Players met with the media yesterday. Let's start there. What are y'all's takeaways from that media availability?
Well, I mean, it certainly was a new bunch of guys that we haven't necessarily seen talk to the media in the past. Anthony Hill, CJ Baxter, and Kelvin Banks. Sarkisian parading around, you know, his former five-star recruits on campus that we all expect to be big pieces of the Texas program and team in 2024. It was a bit interesting because last week we got Quinn Ewers and we got David Benda, kind of the two faces, I would say, of the defense and the offense at the moment, Benda being the most experienced and the guy that's been around in the program the longest. So, you know, if you look at it in the terms of Texas showing off some new leaders, I think that's a fair assessment there with CJ Baxter being a vocal guy on the offensive side of the ball. We know what Anthony Hill can do on the defensive side of the ball. And then Kelvin Banks right there with Quinn Ewers in the conversation for being one of the first Longhorns and first players taking off the board in the 2025 NFL draft. So really a nice little insight from the coaching staff about those three guys to see how well-revered they are inside the program, and also a cool insight to see what kind of comments they have about spring football, their time at Texas, and what their, you know, expectations and excitement levels are for the year coming up in 2024.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was interesting. Anthony Hill was asked about the headset communication, right? And he said they hadn't started that on defense yet. Now they have on offense, as Sark pointed out. So that kind of tells you, obviously on offense, it's quarterback. On defense, they're still going through that process, it sounds like, who is going to be that guy. But look, I thought the Anthony Hill interview was really, really good. I mean, Kelvin Banks is always tremendous, but, and I thought Cedric Baxter was great too. But with Anthony Hill, you know, the things he hit on with Trey Moore, and what that got me thinking about was then Kelvin Banks, obviously, was first up. He talked about Trey Moore. So we talk about the addition of Trey Moore and Colin Simmons, the twitchy edge guys, how much that may help the Texas team next year going with Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell. But so we talk about it from a defensive standpoint. But you know what that press conference made me think about? How much Trey Moore and Colin Simmons, those twitchy edge rushers, are going to help the Texas tackles this year because they're going up against it every day. And that's the kind of the one thing. Now, Ethan Burke's going to be a draft pick. Baron Sorrell have a career in football, right? But the one thing that Texas maybe had lacked was that twitchy edge rush guy with that explosive quickness. Well, that means your offensive line doesn't go against that guy in practice every day either. So now Kelvin Banks, Cam Williams, Trevor Goosby, Brandon Baker, even as a young freshman, they're going up against two of those twitchy edge rushers that have entered the program. That's a very good thing for the offensive line.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And if I can double back on that is, you know, the recurring theme I continue to hear yesterday is guys helping guys within the program, Jerry. And we talked about this a bit yesterday after the availability. But when you talk about, you know, just how important some of these departing guys were that are headed to the NFL were to this group now, that it creates a trickle-down effect. And I think you're starting to see early on in spring ball now. Anthony Hill talked about how important Jalen Ford was to his development. CJ Baxter sat back and told us a story about sitting in film, listening to Jonathan Brooks find new ways to critique himself and learn something from film in meetings with Tashard Choice. And, of course, Kelvin Banks told us he has four guys in that offensive room under his wing right now: Trevor Goosby, Jaden Chapman, Andre Kojo, and the five-star freshman Brandon Baker. So really important to me that you continually see that cycle of team-led or player-led kind of leaders taking control of this team, because I think that was part of what made this Sarkisian culture so special early on, and we're continuing to see it kind of trickle down again from year in and year out. This year, no different, with these guys kind of being your vocal leaders on either side of the ball. Being so young, talented, and on the field so often, you can't get it much better than that if you're Sarkisian.
And the other thing that was interesting before we move on, I know we got a lot of recruiting stuff to hit on this morning as well, was what CJ Baxter said about gap scheme running, the scheme at Edgewater, and going to more of that inside zone scheme in that transition, because the transition we think about with running backs, or that's talked about most, right, is the physicality of the game, right? Especially for a tall upright back. You don't get as many glancing blows. You got glancing blows in high school, except when DeAndre Robinson caught him in a playoff game. In the college game, a lot more solid hits. For a tall back. But that's what's talked about the most with Cedric Baxter. The other thing was eyes up on contact for any young running back. Do you drop your head on that first contact? Do you keep your eyes up and your vision continues to maximize through the play? Those are the two things talked about in pass protection. But it was interesting what CJ Baxter said was part of his transition. Not that Texas doesn't have some gap scheme in the run game, but he was gap scheme heavy at Edgewater in high school. So a different scheme he came into at the University of Texas. And the other thing was that he said that was, you know, he says such a mature outlook, and there's a reason Sark put him in front of the media, was this. He went back to his freshman year in high school when they had a really talented running back that went to Coastal Carolina, put up big numbers at Edgewater. Cedric Baxter wasn't always the starter. He wasn't always the go-to back. He had to share some time, even as good as he was a young player. He even played safety some as a young high school football player. So his maturity, his ability to the way that he looks at things and kind of sees the world and sees football, very, very impressive for Cedric Baxter. And it's why he'll ultimately go on and have a really good career. Very mature guy.
And then guys, obviously, like you said, a big recruiting weekend, Jerry. We'll get into that in a minute. But they're having a scrimmage on Saturday. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. 11 a.m. Texas will scrimmage on Saturday. And that will be obviously with a lot more than two dozen recruits, high-level recruits, high-end guys watching Texas scrimmage. But, yes, this will be the actual CJ, the first scrimmage. Now, last Friday was very much live. I mean, it was a physical, fast-paced, practice, but not necessarily called a scrimmage. Saturday is your first scrimmage of the spring.
Which I think is interesting to note, Jerry, because it kind of puts that added pressure, especially when you get some folks in the stands for this. I know it's not going to be spring game level size or have the circus around it like the spring game will, but you will have, you know, upwards of 35, 40 recruits on campus, all of their family sitting in the stands. Any family members of the Texas team that's in town will likely be able to stop by and see practice as well. So there's going to be some new eyes there. You'll most likely be inside of DKR as well. So having the chain gang and some officials out there will certainly add to the pressure of a scrimmage. And for the new guys, it'll be a big first opportunity to kind of showcase their skills as a Texas Longhorn.
All right, guys, before we get into all the good recruiting news, Jerry, first, can you tell folks out there about how they can escape the insurance trap with BK?
Man, I got to do a read. I got to do a Bobby Burton read today. I don't know. I don't have the big hat, but let's go with this. BKCW, did your business have a frustrating insurance or employee benefits renewal? Most likely, you didn't hear from your agent all year. And then right before it's time to renew, they delivered the bad news of a rate increase. When this happens, the agent is providing zero value and you're stuck in what we call the insurance trap. BKCW takes you out of the insurance trap by providing you with actual risk management consulting, not just price quoting. operating out of their headquarters in Austin, Texas, and owned by a University of Texas proud graduate, BKCW is a five-step process to identify your business's weak spots, design a plan, execute that plan, and monitor your situation throughout the year so that you can lower your insurance costs and effectively manage your company's risks. That sounds great to me. I don't know about you guys. BKCW has already helped some of the most well-known construction companies, restaurant groups, breweries, and nonprofits in Central Texas escape that insurance trap. And it starts with a free risk assessment. Go to bkcw.com or send an email to info@bkcw.com to get started with that free risk assessment or claims audit and escape the insurance trap. Don't fall into the insurance trap.
And of course, we want to thank them for sponsoring each and every Friday right here on Coffee and Football. And yeah, guys, let's just jump right into it. Big recruiting weekend. Y'all have been talking about it all week long. Well, even longer than that over on ontexasfootball.com. But I don't even know where to begin. I'm going to just let y'all take it away.
Well, we have to begin with the decommitment last night. Anthony Williams, linebacker from Shadow Creek, opened up his recruitment. This was expected. Very much expected. Look, when we had been listing the April 6th visitor list, he wasn't on it. When we had the June official visitors list, he hasn't been on it. There was kind of a reason for that because official visit hadn't been set up yet. So when Johnny Nance was hired, I think Texas is looking for different guys at the linebacker position. Anthony Williams, very good player. TCU official visits, Baylor official visit, probably Florida. Very good player. This is more just kind of maybe what Texas needs versus how good a player prospect Anthony Williams is. But again, the linebacker from Shadow Creek decommits last night. Obviously, I watched Elijah Barnes run a track meet Thursday. No-brainer. Riley Pajon, no-brainer. You'll recruit Matei Taoge, the linebacker committed to USC. You'll recruit him through the whistle. Texas is in on a lot of big-time linebackers around the country, maybe longer lever guys, maybe a more physical guy that fits maybe what Johnny Nansen's looking for. And then you have Jonathan Cunningham out of North Crowley. He's visiting April 11th. The only reason he's not visiting April 13th is because he had a family event on the 13th. So he's visiting April 11th. It's a guy that Johnny Nansen went by North Crowley and really liked a lot. Then Steve Sarkisian stopped by and they offered Jonathan Cunningham. How much does Texas push for Cunningham? We'll see. But the fact that they're bringing him in for a visit, outside of those three big names, Jonathan Cunningham is a guy to watch for me.
All right. And then let's obviously talk about the visitors this weekend. Let's start with the defensive line. We talked about it earlier in the week. I'm going to bring the graphic up here and let y'all run down the list.
Yeah. So That's some D-line Texas recruiting, obviously. But
I had the wrong one. I grabbed the wrong one there.
You're good. Hey, that's a great graphic, too. Then there was news last night on Texas Football broke the news that Lamont Rogers is coming in April 6th. So this graphic that Blake's going to bring up, Lamont Rogers will not be on that. Because like we said, this is a kind of list is fluid. Some guys, there may be a guy or two on that list that doesn't end up coming in. There may be two or three additions. One addition is Lamont Rogers, the four-star offensive tackle from Mesquite Horn. He told me Tuesday he was going to LSU this weekend. Texas came in, got that change. He's making the visit down tomorrow with his mom. So Lamont Rogers and his mom will be on campus on Saturday. So there's 4-6 visitors list. I mean, you think it's a big weekend, guys? That doesn't even have Troy Hune, which I'll let CJ get in those 26s in a second. But you think this is a big visit weekend? I mean, I don't know. I'm getting blurry vision trying to count the 4-stars on this list, but it's going to be over 20 combined 4-star, 5-star prospects from the 25 and 26 classes coming in. You know, Racine Guillory commitment's not even on that list for 26, but Jordan Davison will be in. He wasn't on this original list. So guys have been added to the list. This list, it's a tremendous group of talented players. The receivers coming in alone are just, you know, just kind of blows your mind with the talent. I jokingly said if they went out and ran a 4x100, when they're in Austin together, that'd be a pretty fast relay team with DeCorian Moore, Kelshawn, Kalik Lockett, and Jamie French. It'll be Jamie French's first time on campus. I think these are the real key visits for Texas. The guys that are his first time on campus, a Jamie French out of Jacksonville Mandarin, who's a massive national battle. I mean, this is, you know, gird up your loins recruitment now. Ohio State, Miami, Florida State, right? A former Alabama commitment. That's a big-time recruitment out of an area Texas has never pulled that type of player from. But they're in Florida more now than they ever have been. And Malik Autry coming in from Opelika. I mean, he can almost see the Auburn campus from his house, jokingly, but he's not far away. He's coming in this weekend with family members. Those are some big visits for Texas. A lot of the other guys have been on campus before, right? I mean, even John Mills from San Francisco, the offensive lineman, he's been on campus, right? A lot of these guys were at the January 20 junior day. Obviously, DeCorian Moore is going to get a lot of attention. He's in this weekend. He's not going to the LSU spring game as of right now. He's got a 7-on-7 tournament he opted for in Dallas. Then he's expected back April 20th for the Texas spring game. He will release his June official visits when he wants to. He has official visits locked in. Texas is going to get an official visit, and you know it's going to be one of two weekends, and I think we kind of know what it'll be the last weekend. But we'll wait for DeCorian to announce those. Like Jordan Davison has not announced his official visits yet. We'll wait for him to do that on his own timeline, but I expect that to be June 21st through 23rd for Texas. But a lot of big-time players coming in this weekend. A lot of guys visiting Texas for the first time. By the way, I was somebody asked yesterday, and I want to hit on this, is somebody asked about Josh Petty, the offensive lineman from Roswell there, the private school in Roswell. He's definitely looking at coming back to take a visit to Texas. It could be an official in June, or it could be before that with his family. If it's June, it's really one of two weekends for Texas. It's the 14th through 16th or 21st through 23rd. If Texas doesn't get him in on one of those two weekends, it'll be interesting to see if that actually works out.
Yeah, you want to talk about big recruiting visits coming up this week, and add, you know, Aiden Anding to that group as well, Jerry, the cornerback out of Louisiana. We'll see exactly where that goes. But Texas right now, that cornerback recruiting spot, not necessarily the brightest right now. A bit foggy in where Texas will go. Obviously, Kobe Sellers was on campus a week ago. Still think Oklahoma's in the lead there. Getting Dorian Brew back to campus is going to be very important. But you start looking around at other prospects, and you know, it's not as clear as you can look at some of the other spots. You know, when you look at the running back, the wide receivers, the offensive line, you know who Texas is pursuing there. Cornerback might be that spot where you hear some noise out of this weekend, especially if it goes well with, you know, an Aiden Anding. And we'll see again how Texas pursues Cade Phillips out of the defensive back spot. But right now, the defensive backs and specifically cornerback is where I'm looking at in recruiting to kind of make a splash out of this April 6th weekend.
And that, so Aiden Anding, a kid like Chase Sims, D lineman out of Richmond Randall, that's the other thing that'll come out of this weekend is you'll see a couple of guys then move to official visit dates. And that'll be interesting, and that'll be telling after this weekend which guys add official visit dates to Texas in June. So Caleb Chester, another corner out of Marshall, not coming in this weekend. He's coming in April 13th. Somebody asked about Caleb Chester. I can't remember if it was on.com or here. So I wanted to answer that question. Caleb Chester's visiting Texas April 13th, next weekend. So some kids already have other visit plans this weekend. They come in next weekend. Caleb Chester, the corner out of Marshall, will officially visit June 7th through 9th. And then, by the way, CJ, 26 quarterback Torrey Hune on campus this weekend. That's a key one. He just got offered by Ohio State. Obviously, LSU is very much in the picture, but one of the three quarterbacks that Texas has an offer out to in 2026, Torrey Hune, Dia Bell, son of Raja Bell. I think those are the two main guys. Will Griffin coming in next weekend from Jesuit Bat. Getting Torrey Hune back on campus this weekend. He's been on campus before, but here he is. First-year starter. Down in that San Diego, in between San Diego and Carlsbad area. He's from San Marcos, California, Mission Hills High School, but extremely talented pocket passer. Fits a lot of what Steve Sarkisian looks for. So Troy Hune, first-year starter last year, coming in this weekend, a name to know in 2026.
Yeah, coming with them in that 26 class is Texas commit Racing Guillory as well, getting him back to campus. First time after he committed January 21st, the day after his junior day to Texas earlier this winter, joining with him. And Jerry, this will be interesting because Texas likes to recruit nationally at the wide receiver spot. They're going out west for two big time playmakers in the 2026 class, Chris Henry Jr. and Madden Williams, both of them out of two really impressive California high schools, Mater Dei and St. John Bosco, respectively. And then the big one coming out of Buford, Georgia as well, the defensive tackle Bryce Perry White. So if Texas is getting a start on the 2026 class, it's certainly nice to have these five guys coming in, very talented, probably going to be top 150 guys across the board for the five of those. So coming in early, getting a head start there as well. Impressive start. 2027 quarterback Texas is getting a quick look at. Trent Seaborn out of Alabaster, Alabama, coming in. 17 offers, including Alabama at the moment. So, again, just kind of trickling down into getting a little bit of a head start on some of the classes coming up. But big weekend across the board for the Texas Longhorns, and it'll be nice to get them on campus to see a scrimmage, see the practice, see the facilities, and, of course, DKR.
Okay. And a lot of people have asked, by the way, Blake, will anybody commit this week and whatnot? Look, I think Texas will come out of this weekend with more than one silent commitment. When those guys go public, we'll have to see.
One thing that we do always get questions about when y'all bring up the names like Dia Bell, Troy Hune, is people want to know who you guys like better. So we just got to see some of those highlights of Troy. I'll bring up some of Bell, but let's take this question here from Lando McBee. He says, who do you guys like better? But I'm going to add on to that. Can y'all kind of break down their game?
Yeah. Too early for me on that. I'm going to go see Dia in person in May during the spring evaluation period. I think I want to see these guys in person a little bit before I make that call. I think Dia Bell is a very athletic guy. I think he is moves very well in the pocket, moves well outside the pocket. I think Troy Hune is more of your classic pocket guy. Dia Bell is going to make more plays outside of the pocket. We both saw Dia Bell in person, really good frame for a young kid. Obviously, he plays in Plantation American Heritage. Anybody that knows about American Heritage knows how much talent they put out. I mean, they had their two corners at one time where Pat Surtain was the head coach, was Pat Surtain Jr. and Tyson Campbell. Okay, so it's one of the most talented programs in the state of Florida. They do a great job. I mean, look, Florida's a wild, wild west. They do a great job recruiting kids to the school, right? It is what it is. But Dia Bell plays against tremendous talent in practice and plays a really good schedule on the high school level. So he's a proven guy. And I think the interesting thing there is he's played a little bit more varsity football than Troy has. But I think Troy is a tremendous pocket passer, tremendous.
Yeah, that's what I was going to add there, Jerry, with Troy Hune. You haven't seen a lot of him on the field just yet. He's still very new into his high school playing days. But the touch, the precision, and just the straight-up accuracy that he has already, I feel like he has just kind of that feel for getting the ball in areas where it might be a little tight or he might need to put a little loft on it. He has that understanding early on. I thought that was a really impressive showing for his first sign on a varsity team last year.
Christopher Weatherford asked if we could get Blake some Gooders. He was wearing his Gooders. That's why he's got that sun. That's why he's got that suntan
right there.
He was wearing his Gooders.
And then while we're on the subject of quarterbacks, before we move on, fellas, one last quarterback recruiting question. We'll move a year, however. AJJ Sports says, how do you guys think Texas is handling KJ Lacy's commitment while Texas is talking to Russell from Duncanville at the same time?
Look, I just think it's the name of the game in recruiting. I think other schools are still pursuing KJ Lacy, and you have to have a plan if you're Texas. But KJ Lacy's in town this week. He's coming back April 20th. He's got June 21st through 23rd official visit date. Nothing's changed there. Texas is a big, big fan of KJ Lacy, right? Keelan Russell, very talented quarterback. He's actually going to be at A&M this weekend. I bet A&M makes a big push here. He's got Florida scheduled for June 7th through 9th official visit. Alabama's also talking to Keelan Russell more and more. So, you know, it's been Jeff Banks with the contact there with Keelan Russell. But KJ Lacy's on campus this weekend. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll be back in June for an official visit.
Okay, well, guys, it is time for me to tell folks out there about one of our newer sponsors in Autograph. And Obviously, we're all pumped for the big game in Ann Arbor later on this fall. But would you like the chance to win $4 tickets to the Big House against Michigan in honor of our four national championships? Obviously, hopefully five in 2025. But these tickets are retailing for $600+. So listen up here to what I'm about to tell you. Our partner Autograph is dropping a pair of tickets on April 18th at 2 p.m. Central Time in their app. All you have to do is download the app, refer one friend successfully, which means user download plus their sign up, from Wednesday, April 3rd through Thursday, April 18th at 11 a.m. to be eligible. So you got plenty of time, fellas. What, about 13 days, just under 2 weeks to get a buddy to sign up. All they have to do is download it and then create an account, and then you can get in on this. For those that are new, Autograph is where real Longhorn fans get unreal rewards. By bringing fan content and communities into one place, Autograph is the first app that recognizes and rewards fans, turning their passion into access and experiences. It was co-founded by Tom Brady on the belief that devotion should be rewarded and the future of fandom belongs to the fans. So you can scan the QR code there to download the free Autograph app in the Apple App Store and use referral code on Texas. That's referral code on Texas, all one word. Join us and see where your fandom takes you. And hopefully that's to Ann Arbor this fall for a $4 ticket to the Big House. You can't beat that. By the way, if you can't scan the QR code for some reason, after the show, you can refresh the channel here, and we put it down in the description. If you're listening on the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it may be, that link will be in the description as well. But get in on that. You have till the 18th. Get a buddy signed up and get that $4 ticket to the Big House.
James Lee, I've not seen that, but he's James Lee has a comment about Cam Scott, the guard that signed with Texas. He dropped some highlights. I've seen a lot of stuff of Cam Scott this year, and I remain the same. Trey Johnson's a first-round pick after 1 year. Cam Scott will be a first-round pick after two. Texas signed two first-round level guards. You got to put the rest together in the portal.
All right, y'all. Well, we have a ton of questions, plenty of time to get your questions in right here on Coffee and Football presented by BKCW. And let's just start here at the top, and we'll work our way down. We'll start with Antoine. Are we all in on Bo Barnes and Riley Pettijohn?
You mean on Texas football? Oh, yeah. Now, Texas, yes. There's no doubt about it. Two of the top linebackers in the country, both carrying over 210 pounds, over 215 pounds, and they both broke 11 in the 100 meters this week. I mean, they're two of the very best in the country, and they're different linebackers. That's what makes it really good for Texas, too, is they're different linebackers. Elijah Barnes can play a mic. He could also play off the edge. I mean, he is a long-limbed guy, 230 pounds, will be 240, 245. He's going to be a big kid with long arms. He ran 10.96, a little downwind, but, hey, look, 10.96 at 230 in the same heat as DeCorian Moore ran 10.4 in that District of Doom track meet I was at Wednesday. Riley Pettijohn ran 10.77, a little downwind earlier in the week. He can play outside. He can play inside. I mean, these guys are versatile. They're different linebackers. Texas is all in on both of those guys. Riley Pettijohn will be at USC this weekend. He'll be at Texas for the spring game on April 20th. Obviously, Elijah Barnes in with his parents this weekend. He goes to A&M next weekend in Oregon on the 20th. He'll be making his official visit to Texas June 21st through 23rd. Yes, Texas would gladly accept commitments from both of those guys.
Yeah, talk about speed across the field. You get both of those guys in the middle of your defense. Good Lord, you're getting sideline to sideline quickly.
Yes, size, strength, speed guys with range.
And then our next question, fellas, is going to come from E. Kim. He says, good morning from Rockford, Illinois. Would you run through the offensive line names that Texas is seriously considering for 2025 spots?
Well, I can tell you this. They're seriously considering all 10 guys that have scheduled official visits. Now, what happens down the line here, we'll see. Look, they're not bringing in a guy for an official visit that they don't like a lot. They just wouldn't do that. They like all those guys. Now, this weekend, I'm not claiming anything's going to happen here. But John Mills, the Coleman brothers, I mean, look, somebody's asking about the Coleman brothers. They have committable offers. Yeah, they do. John Mills has for a long time. Those three guys will be in this weekend. Obviously, Lamont Rogers is coming in this weekend. Fasusi's the top of the tackle board. And Nick Brooks is coming in from Iowa April 20th and then scheduled for that June 14th through 16th official visit. And that one is interesting to me because he's never been on campus. So is it going to go similar to a Brandon Baker recruitment? We'll see. I think Georgia's in a pretty good spot for Nick Brooks, but where there is a similarity is after that spring game unofficial visit by Nick Brooks, we'll see kind of where Texas what they really feel about that recruitment, because he's one of the best prospects in the country on the offensive lineman. Texas likes all these guys. It's a tremendous year in-state on the offensive line. Jonte Newman may come in Saturday. That one's going to be kind of a late decision. Texas really likes Jonte Newman. He's got an official visit scheduled June 14th through 16th. So there's some very, I say tough decisions, but it's not just Texas decisions. It's other kids' decisions as well. But there's some tough recruitments in this cycle, but it's right where you want to be. And I'll say this, a lot more pressure on A&M than anybody else to have a really good offensive line class in 25. They have to win some of these recruitments in state.
Jerry, I wanted to ask you real quick about that June 14th through 16th official visit weekend, because you look at the offensive line group and three of the five are coming from out of state, whereas, you know, the week after, all of those kids are from the state of Texas. Is that by design when you have John Mills, Juan Gaston, Nick Brooks all coming in on the same weekend just to kind of get an extra look at them, kind of show them off a little bit more?
No, it just – like with John Mills, that just how it happened. That June 21st through 23rd weekend, when Texas was scheduling official visits, his family was supposed to be out of the country at that point in time. So he scheduled up June 14th through 16th. I think he has USC tentatively set for the 21st through 23rd. So that was more of just scheduling with the family, so the entire family could be on that official visit to Texas. They've been before, but they want to come back for the official visit. With Nick Brooks, that's a situation where I was going to get the last official visit, June 21st through 23rd. They're the hometown school, home state school. It's where he was once committed. They asked for the last official visit. They are going to get that last official visit and that recruitment. The key, I mean, look, Georgia's attacking early on a kid like Nick Brooks. Georgia's bringing him in May 31st through June 2nd, which is Georgia's one of their two really big weekends. So it just so happens that's how it's turned out for Texas. I think if all scheduling, you know, all things equal, John Mills will be coming in that last weekend.
Good stuff.
And then our next question, fellas, is going to come from, if I can find it here, I just lost it, Scott Knudsen. And he's asked this a couple times, so I want to make sure to get to it. He says, when will the coaching staff hand out the captains? How many will be issued, and what players do you think will wear them this year?
Well, I think we got a good indication of, you know, who might be in discussion for that captain spot next year. We got a good look at that yesterday, you know, with CJ Baxter, Anthony Hill, and Kelvin Banks coming out. I think that's a little bit of the staff tipping their hand a bit. Defensively, behind the scenes, I mean, Baron Sorrell, Michael Taff, and Benda are probably the most vocal guys that you'll hear. But it's hard to keep a guy like Anthony Hill out of contention for that spot, obviously, especially if he ends up with the helmet communication in 2024, kind of being that guy in charge of your defense, a guy in the middle of your defense who is not coming off the field either. So to me, that's really important. Offensively, Quinn stepping up in a big way. Kelvin Banks is more so a leader by example, but you're not going to find him, you know, stepping out of line or doing things, you know, incorrectly or cutting corners or anything along the lines of that. You like that about Kelvin Banks, and he mentioned it yesterday. Having watched so intently the pro day at Texas a month ago, he understands that you got to take every single rep like it's your last. And he mentioned that yesterday, just not taking things for granted and understanding that scouts look at every single little detail. And so if they're going to look at it, you need to look at it and use it as something to motivate yourself moving forward. So offensively, a Jake Majors, a Kelvin Banks, Quinn Ewers, we've actually heard, you know, prior to Quinn Ewers a week ago, Jonte Cook stepping up in that wide receiving room as well. So who amongst that group do you continue to see stepping in for CJ Baxter and Quinn? We'll see. But those are probably the seven or eight guys I would see in serious contention moving forward for having the C on their chest this fall.
And then Mike D says, who do you guys think is going to play more this year, Jonte Cook or Ryan Wingo?
This is actually a really interesting question because I think coming into the spring would have been undoubtedly right.
Hey, CJ, hold on. Okay, UT boys not in the chat. You're safe. Go.
No, I mean, coming into the spring, to me, it would have been undoubtedly Jonte Cook. But I think that there's been some noise behind Ryan Wingo and seeing, you know, just how quickly Sarkisian was to praise him and how, you know, much we're hearing about him behind the scenes. It's going to make things a little interesting. I still think Jonte having that edge up in the system is going to give him the upper hand. He's the only guy on roster that has a catch from Quinn Ewers a year ago at the wide receiving spot. That's got to mean something. He knows the system. He's got a chip on his shoulder now, having seen Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell depart for the NFL. Now he knows that there's a spot open for him. It's all about going out and grabbing it. So I think, you know, I'll still lean with Jonte, but it's a lot closer than I originally thought coming into the spring.
So the interesting thing at the receiver spot for me is how quickly do you pick up the pre-snap? Everything that comes with being a receiver at Texas is more than what a video clip from a news station shows, right? I mean, the big plays, what you see. So much before snap. It took Jonte a while with that. Just go back to the Iowa State game. It's a complex offense for a wide receiver. Steve Sarkisian's got a third-year starting quarterback and experienced offensive line. He's not going to have anybody out there that's going to mess things up pre-snap. So this is the thing with Wingo. From everything we've talked about, elite, high-end talent. And I'm with Bobby. He's the most talented, size, speed, playmaking, all of it. He's the most talented receiver Texas has recruited since Roy Williams. I'm with Bobby on that. If you start to hear that Wingo's a whiz with the scheme, watch out. Because it normally takes guys a little time, even the transfer guys. It takes time. It's a more complex scheme pre-snap. Sark puts more demands on those guys with all the pre-snap movement. So if Wingo just goes, boom, like he just rips through that, then you have a potentially special player. I think because of that, it's a slower process for a freshman receiver out of high school, even as an early graduate, which Jonte Cook was last year. So Cook's got a big up in that regard.
And while we're on the subject of that, we will go to this question from Nathan Duck. He says, how many touchdown passes do you guys think Quinn will throw, and how many will Isaiah Bond have?
Ooh. I'm different on this subject, guys. Everybody wants like 35 touchdown passes for Quinn. I hope it's 28 because that means Texas is running the ball in the red zone and scoring. And if you look at Texas team last year to this year, offensively, red zone is the one area you'd say, okay, this is where Texas needs to ascend the most. Well, I want 28 touchdowns in a 4.5-to-1 touchdown interception ratio for Quinn. I want the lower touchdowns because that means Texas is running the ball in the red zone effectively and scoring with the run game. I think that would be a very good sign for Quinn. Jonte all day.
I'll go 30 is the floor for Quinn. I just think there's too many opportunities left on the field a year ago in the red zone specifically. You don't expect Bert Auburn to be leading the country in field goal attempts again this year. And I think as a result, you'll find the end zone a little bit more often than what we saw. Again, we've talked about this at length, but it's bizarre how Texas got to the red zone installed. I think, you know, as we've seen in the past, Texas has glaring issues a year prior and they get them rectified and fixed the year after. The red zone will be that, you know, that issue this year.
And then our next question, fellas, is going to come. We'll switch back over to recruiting for just a little bit. Roger G says, Jerry, is the DeCorian Moore recruitment similar to Colin Simmons last year?
I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at there. I have a feeling, but look, I will say this. Colin, you know, obviously was never publicly committed like that. I would say this. There's more connections to Austin and Texas for DeCorian Moore. Obviously, his mom graduated from high school at Lanier High, which is no longer Lanier High, obviously. But still has family in Austin. People in that family have gone to the University of Texas, graduated from the University of Texas. So there's a lot more connections. I mean, DeCorian spent a lot more time in Austin around Texas fans growing up than Colin did. So it's different in that regard. The crazy thing about the Colin Simmons recruitment is I think back to the first time I went up there to see him. It was before spring after his freshman year, spring practice of freshman year before sophomore year. And the first time you talked to him, you knew he was going to play in the SEC was a done deal, right? He pretty much told me, for 2 years, I'm going to play in the SEC. I'm going to play in the SEC. So that recruitment was different because when it first began, he wasn't looking at Texas as an SEC team. Then obviously it transitioned to Texas being an SEC team because I don't think Colin Simmons would be at Texas regardless if Texas was still in the Big 12. That guy was going to go play in the SEC. So it's different in that regard. SEC, yes, for DeCorey Moore. I know Ohio State will get a visit. Oregon will get a visit. This is Texas LSU to me. So, you know, that SEC draw is there. Maybe not – DeCorey doesn't come out and say it. I mean, Colin Simmons just – he left, no doubt. That's what he would say. I mean, and you look at how many visits he took to SEC schools. He went to Florida. He went to Georgia. He went to Alabama. He went to LSU. I mean, so there were a lot of SEC visits for Colin Simmons looking around in the conference, but I do think they will end up in the same conference.
Hey, Juan here says, Jackson Jeffco just stopped by his workplace for a class. Big dude. We've been trying to get him on the show here. I've been talking to him, so hopefully we will have him on one day here soon.
But hey, you want to talk about Jackson Jeffco? Yeah, I covered that recruitment. He's still one of my favorite guys that I've covered. Unbelievable, just class, the way he handled the recruiting process. I don't think he would have been fazed by the social media of today. I don't think that would have changed him one bit. Jackson Jeffcoat's still to this day one of the most impressive guys I've covered just in conversation, multiple conversations. So I've always had such a great respect for Jackson Jeffcoat. Obviously, his father was coaching college ball. Obviously, his father had a history in the NFL as a college player. But with that being said, Jackson had a maturity about him and an understanding of our job in the media. His job as one of the top recruits in America, whether he's ranked one, two, or three, he handled it as well as anybody I've ever been around.
All right, we're going to take a few more recruiting questions here, and then we'll switch gears. How legit is Ricky Stewart's interest in Texas? Asked Scott.
I mean, look, that Texas offer meant more to him than any other offer he's had in his life. He's scheduled to be in this weekend, has June 14th, 16th official visit. Look, that he loves Texas. In fact, when I was by Chapel Hill, and he said that offer made his mama proud, and everybody at her work was congratulating her and Ricky.
Yeah, and on the field, how about 40 touchdowns and over 3,000 rushing yards a year ago? The kid can play some ball as well.
The thing about Ricky, too, to that point, CJ, is the crazy thing is when I went up and made a run through East Texas and I talked to two coaches that played against Ricky Stewart, and they both said the same thing. This is a great thing for somebody to say about a running back. Two things. One, faster in person than he looked on film. Two, tough. Those are two great things to hear for a running back at a young age, because when these coaches turn on the tape, and one of those coaches that played him previously and said, whoa, he was even faster than we thought he was going to be as a junior. When those guys that see you a lot and they know you, when they sit there and watch the film and they think one thing, and then on Friday night, they're looking at each other saying, man, this guy's faster than he looked on tape. That's a really good sign for a running back.
Okay, guys, and we've had a lot of questions this morning about Devin Sanchez, so I'm going to let one of y'all kind of break that down. Why didn't Texas push very hard for Devin Sanchez as one of them? Then we had one that was, if Texas is still going after him, what's the latest with him? So I'm just picking one there to put up, but we've had numerous.
Let's say this. If Devin Sanchez ever called Texas and had interest, Texas would absolutely have interest in Devin Sanchez. Why Texas didn't maybe go on as hard on him as a couple others did early on, tough answer there. But I mean, look, Texas put in their work. They were by North Shore. They had a relationship there. But you know, Devin Sanchez ultimately chose Ohio State, but I'll say this, if Devin Sanchez ever wants to, make some phone calls, Texas will pick up that phone call.
Yeah, to your point, Jerry, I think there were other relationships. Having talked with Devin a few times about a year ago this time, there were just other relationships that had, you know, kind of started established a little bit quicker than what happened at Texas. And as a result, I think he just started looking elsewhere. I know Jay Valai at Oklahoma was one of the coaches that he loved early on. And as a result, you know, it kind of felt like Texas was playing from behind from the very get-go.
By the way, Elijah Booker, yeah, Javion Osborne, the Forney running back's tremendous in 2026. He was on campus last Friday, an official visit to watch spring practice. Racine Guillory committed to Texas right now. Texas absolutely loves Racine Guillory. They really like Osborne too. Tre'Darrion Bell at Texas High. 2026 at running back in Texas. Everybody's going to get somebody really good if they evaluate the position well.
Yep.
We have a super chat here from Jeff Carey. Let's talk basketball for a second. He says, Jerry, who's coming back for Texas basketball?
Take it away. Kendall Weaver. If you saw the Travis Scott picture, it was Caden Shedrick and Weaver were in that one, and Devin Pryor. So there's some work to be done there in the portal, and I'm not saying that's absolute there, but I think there's a trend with the guys that could return versus are going to return. So Texas, look, they got to get a point guard out of the portal. They've got to get two bigs out of the portal. One better be able to face up and shoot it. And then one needs to kind of be a stronger, more rugged defender, but you can't take two rugged defenders else you won't be able to score. So they got to have somebody that can face up and won't be able to space the floor. So they got to have somebody that can space up, space the floor from that big position. And then they're going to need a wing shooter, somebody that can help spread that floor. They've got to get four or five, probably four guys out of the portal. If they could get another high school guy late that was a big, that would be nice. But it probably won't be a developmental big if they go that direction. It would be an impact big as much as a freshman can be. But it's going to be so key to put the right experience around Trey Johnson, because you're going to have him for a year. And he's going to average 15, 16, 17 a game as a freshman. He's that level player. But they got to have the right experience around him. And so it'll be interesting in the portal. Kansas already struck twice on two guards. One of them Texas really had interest in, but that kid was from Lawrence. I mean, that kid was going to Kansas. Texas is talking Andre Stojakovic, but BYU's. We'll see how close to the West Coast he stays this time. First time around, mom wanted him closer to home because he has a younger sister that plays volleyball, so travel was going to be tough. We'll see. I mean, does he stick closer to the West Coast and go to BYU? We'll find out in a few weeks.
Okay, guys, let's see here. We have one other super chat that we need to get to. Jay Lee says, in the future, what's stopping us from making tuition part of NIL for top recruits? Which would free up scholarships for walk-ons and other recruits?
I'm pretty sure, you know, it's a little hairy with the NCAA, I believe. So, you know, teams try that. They get a little bit of a sense of that as well. But I think at some point the NCAA has got to, you know, they put their foot down and say, yeah, if you're going to be, you know, recruited and on scholarship, that's got to be the main focus there.
Yeah, I think the thing too is, look, if we eventually head to a profit sharing, which I do think that's where this thing's headed, the way that happens if guys are actually become employees. That's the next couple of big steps in this process. Both of those happen to answer that question. Bobby probably would have a more in-depth opinion on that than I do.
Yeah. Bert Auburn, still not on scholarship at the moment. Nation's leading kicker a year ago, NIL treating him just fine, I would assume. But, yeah, still not on scholarship at the moment.
And, by the way, some people have said NCAA, and they're correct. I just wonder in 5 years what's going to be. I think long term we're headed to the conferences controlling this thing. Two conferences.
Okay, before we move on, I need to tell folks out there it's Friday, so it's Chinook time. I need to tell folks out there about Chinook. Guys, baseball is in full swing. You got to get geared up for the season. You've been watching Texas baseball go up and down and up and down and up and down on the Longhorn Network. You've renewed your MLB TV subscription. You're ready to see the Rangers win more and see the Astros lose a little bit as well. But don't forget the most important thing of all, you got to have sunflower seeds, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm talking Chinook sunflower seeds.
Wow.
They are a must when it comes to baseball. Chinook has you covered. They got original Parmesan and pepper, my favorite. Bobby Witt Jr.'s favorite, lemon pepper. They got Hatch chili, jalapeno ranch, and a whole bunch of others as well. 8 unique flavors to choose from. You're definitely going to find the flavor you love, whether you're taking them on a camping trip, to the ball game, or of course, on the wide open road. Chinook has crafted the best tasting sunflower seeds on the planet, and their unique flavors are made from real foods and spices like real Parmesan cheese, authentic Hatch chilies, and freshly harvested dill. So whether you're actually in the game or just watching it, go grab a bag of Chinook. Find them in your favorite store, or you can order online at Chinook Seedery. And of course, you can seed the day with Chinook.
And Chinook, if you ever come out with an SPF 45 sunflower seed, Blake will eat them all.
Hey, I'm a sucker for some dill pickle, Blake. So if you got an extra bag, send it my way. I love watching some good baseball with some dill pickle. And as a result, I guess if I'm headed to the dish anytime soon, I'll leave that dill pickle at home because a 7-5 loss last night to BYU, Blake. Let me get your thoughts real quick.
Is this a good time? Is this a good time to say the BYU Cougars brought the lawnmower to the Texas Longhorns yesterday? Or what?
Let me.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man, yeah. Let's talk baseball for a second, guys. We've had a lot of questions about it. And if you did miss it, as CJ said, 7-5 loss. Texas, I think, was down. I didn't get to see the game. I was at T-ball and district track, but they were down 6-0 after the top of the fifth. I think BYU added another one right after that as well. Texas put up 5 runs combined in the fifth and the sixth, but really just not a lot going, guys. I know D. Kennedy had a big day at the plate. I think he went 3-for-4 there, so that's good news there. He's been coming on strong. I believe Max Ballou also had a 3-hit day, if I remember correctly. So there's some good and then a lot of bad. And a lot of people are asking me about LBJ. Guys, I don't really know what to tell you on that. I mean, everyone say, oh, he needs new pitching coach, blah, blah, blah. LBJ hasn't won a Friday night matchup since March 8th. I was telling CJ this earlier, against Texas Tech. So that means he's lost to Washington, Baylor, Kansas State, and now BYU in that order. And, I mean, other pitchers are getting it done, so I'm not saying it's just his fault, and I'm not saying it's Pierce's fault, but I think there's something going on there. I don't know what. I'm digging deeper trying to figure out what that is. I can tell you, Ace Whitehead has looked pretty good. He'll be getting the start tonight, and then Max Grubbs will be getting it on Saturday. Remember, when you play BYU, you're not playing on Sunday, so that series started yesterday and will conclude on Saturday night. Before last night, though, the Longhorns were batting .303 with 76 doubles, 58 home runs. Pitching staff had a team ERA of 4.48, 236 strikeouts so far. But as far as LBJ goes, which is the hot topic of discussion,
it's a frustrating one, Blake.
It is, man. You can't just say, oh, it's Coach Pierce. It's Coach Pierce, because if it was just Coach Pierce, then the other pitchers wouldn't be getting it done.
Here's what I noticed last night watching LBJ, and I've watched a number of his starts this year. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a baseball savant, though I do follow the sport very closely. LBJ has a very flat fastball, and what that means is there's no movement left to right. There's no movement up or down. It doesn't get quickly up on the hitter in the box. There's no extended reach on his throws that kind of makes things a little bit more difficult. So while you see 95, 96 on the gun, it's very flat. There's no deception there. When you can't spot your slider, you can't spot a changeup, what are teams doing? We saw it last night. BYU sat dead red on the fastball all night, and as a result, hit multiple balls onto Comal Street right behind the field. So it's one of those things where if you're not able to add anything new to your pitching and you sit there and rely on what got you there, which was just your fastball at the point, teams are able to sit back, and that doesn't necessarily bode well when teams see 95 and 96 year in and year out. You know, it's one of those things. 96 isn't what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Teams see that every weekend now. So for LBJ specifically, if you cannot add some sort of movement to your pitching or have a reliable second and third option pitch, that's just kind of – it's going to be the same result that you see on a week-in, week-out basis, which is unfortunate because Texas is looking at him like they need that number one to be, you know, that solidified guy moving forward. So it's got to change, and there's got to be some sort of adjustment moving forward for the Longhorns there.
Yes, definitely. And we had this question here I'll take real quick from Archmania. Will we get crushed, or how bad will we get crushed in SEC baseball if serious changes don't occur? I think I was actually talking to somebody that knows a heck of a lot more about baseball, and specifically Texas baseball, the other day about this. And he said, just thank God that we're not in the SEC this year, that fans just need to be prepared that it's going to be that season from here on out, up and down and up and down and up and down. Did hear some good news. Can't get into it too much, but help is on the way. It sounds like a good thing happening there. But that obviously doesn't help for the last year of the Big 12. And again, I think you just got to hope that you kind of get hot at the right moment. Although my faith in that is dwindling quickly. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, guys, but it's not just, and I'm not like trying to be a Coach Pierce homer, but I see a lot of people blaming him for LBJ. It's not just Coach Pierce on LBJ. There's something that
the roster's putting up, or the lineup's putting up some numbers. I'll say that. You know, that you mentioned the doubles, the home runs, the slugging percentage is certainly amongst the top in the Big 12. So the lineup, if they're not able to score five runs, I put up the stat the other day on the Sunday Funday video, but 17-4, I guess 17-5 now, when Texas scores more than five runs. They were 2-7 in games in which they did not score. So that's your issue there. Look to the mound to get, you know, some solutions for next year.
Yeah, definitely. So, and again, I'm not being a Pierce homer. I'm not defending the guy. I'm just saying you can't blame all of LBJ's problems on Pierce. There's something else going on. I do agree. A ton of changes need to be made in a ton of different areas. So I am 100% with y'all on that. I'm just, as the person I talked to said, glad we're not in the SEC this year. It would be ugly. So, all right, we got a super chat here for you, Jerry Hamilton. We're going to circle back to you from UT Boy. He says, Jerry Hamilton, you know better than to go against Jonte.
No, hey, look, I think Jonte is going to be a 30-35 catch guy this year for Texas. I do. I think he's going to be a consistent guy for Quinn in the passing game. It won't shock me if somebody said this in the chat, and I kind of agree, if Ryan Wingo maybe doesn't make a few more splash flash plays.
We're going to get on to some more questions here. You still got some time to get your questions in, so please do so. You're watching Coffee and Football presented by BKCW. And let's take this question here from Jesse Ullman. He says, I feel like Sadir Mitchell will hardly see the field during his time at Texas. Please tell me good news and that I'm wrong, because we need Sadir.
Yeah, so I think this spring, obviously, he's been dealing with a little bit of a health issue. This spring, summer are going to be huge for him. Obviously, you hope he takes a big step this spring. So far, that hasn't happened. He has to, though. Look, he's Bo Davis coach last year. Kenny Baker coaches him this year. If you have two really, really good football coaches and you don't make a move with either one of them, that's not a good sign. But I think he came in. Look, I think Sadir, look, one of the guys that trained him, thought he, to this day, thinks he could be a tremendous football player. I think the maturity part for him has been big. And I think he's been behind some other guys there. And I'm not talking in trouble type of maturity. I'm just talking the approach, the day-to-day consistency of practice. I mean, we've seen some of the same issues with Alfred Collins, right? A guy that's extremely talented. But this year, Alfred Collins can end up being a third-round pick if he ever puts it all together. He's that level talent. So I don't want to give up on Sadir. I think this is a developmental position, and it always will be a developmental position. But I would like to see some progress made. Because here's the reality. If he doesn't make progress last half of this spring and early in August, Alex January is going to wave by. I mean, Alex January is doing well. So, Sadir, you want him to come on, because there are just not many guys at his size that have the first two-step quickness he has. Sadir, I'm not giving up on Sadir. I want to see him make some strides. But at the same time, if he's patient with the process, now Texas needs more from him now. If he's patient with the process, the race isn't over for him. He's just behind right now.
Yeah. I got to real quick before we go back to football. Yeah, softball taking on top-ranked OU this weekend.
And yes.
A top five matchup. That is a big deal. I should have mentioned that. My apologies to them. So, Trey says, Texas has a lot of guys coming in this weekend and then obviously for official visits in June. What's the max number of kids you want on campus before it's too many?
I'm not sure there is. I think you want a full evaluation on as many players as you can get. And you want these guys on campus multiple times. You want to make sure if you're Texas, now that you can get more players on campus because you're winning games, you want not only a player on campus, you want the family on campus. You want to see – you have to protect your culture. And I do think the term culture is overused sometimes, but I do think it has meaning as well. What the biggest job, I think, for Sark and the staff right now are protecting the culture. The hardest thing to do is after you start winning and you have so many guys that want to come visit and you could get more guys, you could collect talent versus continuing to assemble a team. You have to protect your culture and make sure the guys ultimately in these classes are on the same level that you have been getting the last two or three classes. So protecting that culture is big. I don't think you can, there's a number where it gets to be, hey, I'm bringing in too many guys. I expect there to be 44 official visitors in June when it's all said and done.
And then our next question, fellas, is going to be from LL. We'll go back to recruiting for a second. What's an update with Jordan Davidson, the running back?
CJ? Yeah, expected to come in this weekend. A big-time opportunity for the Longhorns to get back some momentum Ohio State took a week ago when he visited not only Ohio State but Michigan as well. The Buckeyes looking like a team that are probably the most formidable foe at the moment for this recruitment in terms of what Texas has to go up against. But getting him back on campus is going to be big, especially with a weekend like this when KJ Lacy's coming in, already in the class, plus a number of big offensive linemen. You talk about the Coleman brothers, John Mills coming in, Lamont Rogers. I mean, the wide receiving group also gives you an understanding of who he might be playing with on the playmaking side of things. So for Jordan Davidson to come in and kind of get that face time again with Tashard Choice and Steve Sarkisian here, a great opportunity for Texas to kind of slow down and silence some of that momentum Ohio State gained a week ago.
All right. And then the question everybody wants to know, fellas, putting you on the spot, Todd Lathy, how long before Texas starts to get commitments?
Look, there'll be some silent guys. There's some guys Texas feels really, really good about. We'll see how many guys are actually willing to speed up the timeline and how much Texas actually pushes for those timelines to be sped up. I mean, a timeline being sped up could be not so much this weekend, but maybe after the spring game, if somebody was going to speed up a timeline. So out of the question, guys, commit publicly, not out of the question. Will Texas leave this weekend with a two or three more silent commitments than they have had? Yes, they will. But there's also a process that has to play out. Look, if there's two or three prospects that visit this weekend and they're not on campus with their family, then the chances of them actually making a public commitment are near zero. So could they come back two or three weeks later and then something happen? Sure. So it's all about this process, who's coming down with you, who Texas really pushes for, how much Steve Sarkisian wants to speed up the process on some of this. Texas is going to make the most of the spring evaluation period. I mean, just look at a kid like CJ mentioned earlier, Aiden Anding. He offered March 28th. This will be the first time he's ever been on campus. This will be the first time he's ever met in person Steve Sarkisian, Terry Joseph, sat down with these guys, PK, Johnny Nance, and the defensive staff. First time his family's been on campus in Austin. So you have a lot going on. You have some things going on like that. And when you look at D-line, I mean, Kenny Baker, that spring evaluation period, he's going to go see the Derry Norris kid in Spruce Creek. He's going to go see kids in Georgia and see where some of these recruitments can go. So how much Texas pushes, we'll see. Sark's not in a big, big hurry.
All right, guys. And then this next question here is from Max. And he says he asked it to you, Jerry, but I'm gonna say it for both of you because I'm curious both of y'all's answers. Who are your – and I'm not even going to say top three, but who are your must-get recruits for Texas, excluding the quarterback?
Ooh, Jerry, you want to take it first? I've got three off the top.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon Brown is one for me. And I'm going to go either or Josiah Sharma or Zion Williams. I mean, I think Sharma maybe is a more versatile guy. Hell, I could just leave those three and move on. I'm not going to do that. But I think two of those D linemen are guys for me. And then on offense, it's DeCorian Moore. I don't care how much talent you have at receiver at Texas. You know, and a lot of people are saying, what about Fasusi? Well, Fasusi would be great, but John Turntine in 2026 is the best offensive line prospect in the state, if not in the country. And so, but DeCorian Moore is a super freak type of guy for me. So, I mean, like, I saw him again at the track meet Wednesday. He ran 10.4 his downwind, but he's a 10.5 guy. He's quick. He's fast. He's explosive. He can go high point of football. He's a little different, man. And if you put a guy like that next to a junior Jonte Cook and a sophomore Ryan Wingo and anybody else that may come back, you have the ability to light the fire offensively and strike up the band a lot and put a ton of pressure on defenses. So DeCorian's got to be in there for me. And that's not normal for me at wide receiver, but I think he's a little different than a lot of guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll even add just holding on to, you know, guys like Lance Jackson and Brandon Brown and me. You know, Texas got in early. They liked what they saw. Clearly two guys that are playing above their ranking at the moment. So holding on to the two of them. And then if you can go out and add a Hayden Lowe or Smith Orogbo to me, just continuing that length and athleticism on the edge, which is so important in the SEC. And we're seeing and hearing great things about this group already. It should be a difference maker this year for the Longhorns. But if you can continue that similarly to the tackles on the offensive side of the ball, it will make things a whole lot easier for both sides.
Hey, Blake, I know we got to reset some things, but go to Tom Doyle's question real quick, because I want the people in the chat to comment on this too.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
A great question. And then I'm going to get the BKCW and give all the Texas fans some time to think about their answer.
Somebody says, I'll read it out for our podcast listeners. What's your favorite high school football stadium to watch a game at? And which fan base makes it toughest on the opposing team to play there? I got two answers.
My favorite stadium has been this way for years. I love going to game at Longview. I just love it. There's something about, you know, the little bowl, the piney woods, the trees, especially when Lufkin plays at Longview. That's probably my favorite high school game I've ever been to. There's so many great stadiums. I wanted to bring that up, get everybody's thoughts. But I love Longview. I just love it. If you told me I had one game left to go to on a Friday night, I would say, when's Lufkin playing at Longview? And I'll be there. That's the one for me.
Adam commenting about Sherman right next to 75 going north. We got to play up there a number of times in high school. Had a great time. Pure grass. One of the few, you know, great grass stadiums that you have in the DFW area. I loved it. Small locker rooms, though. Horrible.
And I fully expect some people to say the Tomato Bowl in Jacksonville. There's so many great stadiums out there. I mean, but Longview for me. What you got, Blake?
I'm going to ask you, if you had to pick a fan base that makes it, maybe not your favorite stadium, but let's look at the second part of this question.
That's easy. It's Stephenville, because they drive thing for seven straight hours, and you have to take Tylenol and Advil when you get in the car before you even go to the game.
100%.
I'll always be a sucker for a packed Allen game. Just how crowded those places get. I mean, it's right down the street from me. Seeing Kyler kind of build that place, those games are incredible.
So my answer for the second part is Stephenville. Yeah, 100%. By the way, Stephenville just got a transfer in. Going to be dangerous next year. And then, man, honestly, Shotwell Stadium, maybe. Shotwell Stadium or Gordon Wood. Hey, Gordon Wood probably edges out Shotwell for me, but Gordon Wood's just beautiful with the way that the trees are it's just a very cool stadium. If you haven't seen it, go look online. Just that old school type stadium, but just the layout of it, I think, is my favorite one to watch a game at, and just, you know, the nostalgic piece of it. But yeah, definitely Stephenville makes it the toughest, as Jerry said. They ring in those shakers. And they just shake those things nonstop.
Hey, don't get that. We don't need that noise on the show. We'll settle with Manscaped. But hey, look, another one.
Now Josh, there it is again.
The most intimidating place to play, and for those that are on this chat, they won't be surprised. Galveston ball, because you might get your bus might get rocked, your tires might get slashed. I mean, look, the lights may go out in the stadium. Galveston ball back in the day was a rough, rough place to play. Now that's the one you went to, and you're like, all right, we come in one bus and we may have to leave in another bus. Okay, that's just the reality.
Jared, we did get robbed at Sherman.
Do what?
We did get robbed at Sherman. We came back from a game there and saw the window all busted open behind the field. So that's a place nice historical spot, Rabbi 75, but a quick getaway for anybody looking to make a quick score. That's for sure.
There you go. Somebody said PNG. That's an unbelievable position.
Albany is another good, very small school, obviously, but they have a very, very cool stadium. Like as far as the historic stuff goes, I love it too. And a beautiful backdrop. Had to climb up on the press box there this past season, and I hate heights. So that's a whole other story. But, all right, guys, we may have to post that question on ontexasfootball.com and go in a lot more in depth on that because we could do a whole show on that stuff right there. But, Jerry, if you're ready, tell folks out there how they can escape the insurance trap.
Yeah, look, guys, it's time to avoid that insurance trap, man. BKCW, they have the answer. Did your business have a frustrating insurance or employee benefits renewal? Most likely, you didn't hear from that agent all year long, but right before it's time to renew, magically, you got that call, and they delivered the bad news on the rate increase. When this happens, the agent is providing zero value, and you're stuck in what we call the insurance trap. BKCW takes you out of that insurance trap by providing you with an actual risk management consulting, not just price quoting. Huge difference. Operating out of their headquarters in Austin, Texas, and owned by a University of Texas proud graduate, BKCW uses a five-step process to identify your business's weak spots, design a plan, execute it, and monitor your situation throughout the year so that you can lower your insurance costs and effectively manage your company's risk. BKCW has already helped some of the most well-known construction companies, restaurant groups, breweries, and nonprofits in Central Texas escape the insurance trap. And it starts with a free risk assessment. Go to BKCW.com or email info@bkcw.com to get started with a free risk assessment or claims audit and escape that insurance trap.
We want to thank them once again for sponsoring each and every Friday right here on Coffee and Football. And guys, we're running a little late, but before we get out of here, we've had a lot of people join us this morning. I mean, a lot. So for those that missed it, kind of go back over why this is such a big weekend for the Longhorns.
Yeah, I think over 20 combined four-star, five-star prospects in the classes of 25 and 26. That number may end up being 25. We'll see. But look, it's guys that are going to be on campus for the first time, okay? That's a Aiden Anning. That's a Malik Autry. Some guys like that, Jamie French, first visit to Austin, first visit to Texas, right out of Jacksonville Mandarin. Malik Autry, Opelika out of Alabama, as Texas continues to expand their Southeast region SEC recruiting footprint. Those are big visits for Texas. Then you have guys coming in. Look, at Devin Coleman out of Cedar Hill was one of the later offers in state in this class. Okay. Now he's coming back as a guy with an offer. That's a different visit when you come back with an offer. There's a different attention. There's a different way you're looking at that university and that coaching staff communicates with you now. So there's a lot going on. Then you have a guy, your committed quarterback, KJ Lacy, around all these wide receivers in this class. I mean, DeCorian Moore, he's going to be the guy people are talking about the most, but DeCorian will be back April 20th and in June for a spring official visit. He's probably been around the UT campus more than any other player that's going to be on campus this weekend. So he's more familiar with everything. There's nothing really he's going to learn that he didn't already know. But I think the other big thing, CJ, this is players where players recruiting players begins for Texas. These guys are there for a scrimmage. They're going to be hanging around the Texas team. They're going to be sitting in on some of the meetings before the scrimmage. That's what's big about this official visit weekend or unofficial visit weekend. The guys that will get in, they'll get in time to sit in on the position meetings, team meeting, or what have you. So this isn't a drive up the campus. go see the campus, talk to the coach and staff, and you're out event. This is actually sitting in these position rooms. So this is the first time Zion Williams will get to watch Kenny Baker work. Malik Autry watch Kenny Baker work. Those are some really big events for Texas in recruiting. And then the prospects, if they didn't already know Texas players, they're going to connect with guys this weekend. And what happens after this weekend is, hey, you know, Coach Baker, what do you think of Coach Baker so far? I mean, you know, do you like the way he's doing this, doing that? In recruiting, a running back's going to be talking to Cedric Baxter, Jarrett Gibson, and Christian Clark. Hey, everything that Coach Choice told you, is all this stuff true? That's where players start recruiting players. That's a big part that will come out of this weekend, because that's when this process really starts to accelerate through June, CJ.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, Jerry. I wanted to add this. You know, what kind of play call Sarkisian dials up for a guy like Arch Manning this weekend with these big-time wide receivers coming in? You know, that big selling point is having a quarterback that can get you the rock, and no one brings more attention to them than Arch Manning does. So with, you know, Kalik, Kelshon, DeCorian, Jamie French coming in, those are the top of the Texas board on the wide receiving spot. Having Arch Manning put up a good day is very important there.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to for today's edition of Coffee and Football presented by BKCW. Is there anything that y'all are working on that people need to be aware of? Stories, whether it's on the YouTube channel, whatever it may be, what should people know about?
Yeah. So Bobby and I will do a pretty extensive visit weekend preview, which we'll have up. That'll be up Saturday morning. But we have a Longhorn live stream this afternoon from 1 to 2, Rod Babers, CJ, and myself. So we'll be talking it up again. Once again, we'll continue to stay updated. We're going to be pinging kids. Like, we broke the news last night that Lamont Rogers, that four-star offensive tackle for Mesquite Horn, is coming in Saturday. He changed his LSU visit and is coming into Texas. That could happen for Texas a couple other times. Maybe somebody doesn't show up. So we'll be keeping tabs on that and kind of checking in with guys one more time just to make sure who's coming in, who's getting on those flights. But again, there's also 7-on-7 tournament in Dallas this weekend. So you're going to have some kids from out of state maybe show up on campus a little bit today and may not be at the scrimmage in the morning. So we'll keep you up to date on all that.
Okay. We want to thank our sponsors today, BKCW, Autograph, and Chinook. Can't thank them enough. Be sure to check them out. And don't forget, if you miss the QR code for those for the chance at that $4 Big House tickets, then it will be in the description here in just a minute of this video. Thank you all for tuning in. We can't thank that. Thank you all for the support, for helping us grow over 40,000 subscribers. That's nothing simply short of amazing. If you haven't already, be sure to hit that like and subscribe button. We would definitely appreciate that. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime and every time that we post a video or, of course, go live. And then head on over to ontexasfootball.com for continuous Longhorn coverage. So for CJ Vogel and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you Monday morning.
Go get some sun this weekend, Blake. You look terrible.